Good morning. This is Tracy Hales Bass. I'm excited today to talk to Kevin Wolf. He was the winner of the Tony Hillerman Novel Contest for his novel, The Home Place, A Mystery. He's also written a novel titled Brokeheart and recently A Town Called Vengeance. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning.
I have to tell you, I really enjoyed the two books of yours I read. So The Home Place won the Tony Hillerman Prize, you said, in 2015?
2015.
Yeah.
The Hillerman Prize, when I won it in 2015, I think that was the 11th year of the contest. And before Tony died, Anne partnered with St. Martin's book for the contest. It was something that her father, being an educator, wanted to help young writers, starting writers, mm-hmm. and knew how difficult it was to get your foot in the door. And so the contest was something that Tony got going. I guess it would have been about 2003, 2002 or something like
okay.
that. And the contest was you had to be unpublished mm-hmm. in mystery, and the novel had to be a mystery novel set someplace in the Southwest.
Right.
And as they defined Southwest at that time, it was West Texas, New Mexico, of course, Arizona, Southern Utah, Southern Colorado, Southern Nevada, and I think that at one time they were allowing California, Southern California, if
wow.
it didn't touch the ocean.
That's a big area. And Home Place is set in southeastern Colorado, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah.
In there, you mentioned a place I used to work, Lamar Community College.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I know the area of which you wrote, even uh-huh. though the names are changed to protect the guilty.
My mother's side of the family homesteaded in eastern Colorado in 1915.
Wow.
And in fact, last week at the Colorado State Fair, the homestead was recognized by the State of Colorado Board of Agriculture, Colorado Historical Board, and the State Fair is one of them. They inducted 32 farms, they call them centennial farms and ranches, that have been continually working farms owned by the same family. Something they started, I believe, in 1986. They're up to over 500 farms and ranches, and Gray Family Homestead was recognized just last week.
Oh, wow. So it's still being worked as a farm?
It's still in ownership by my great aunt, and they're still raising some crops and running some cattle.
Well, how about that? So you know of what you talk about in this book.
That community was the model
mm-hmm.
For I call the town Brandon.
Right.
In the novel, and it's my connection was that I had my mother's older brother never married, was a bachelor his whole life, and took me and a cousin that's about my age down to he called it the home place, the farm, hunting and to help out and stuff. So over a period of, I probably started going down there when I was 17 or 18 with him to hunt. And so I'd seen how that community had changed all those years.
Mm-hmm.
When we first started going down, there was four cafes and three gas stations.
Wow.
Now if you go down there, there's one cafe that's working, and the only gas station is a self-pay pump.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, not...
It's like so many rural communities, just no jobs.
Right.
And farming has changed from the farm, family farm, to
the big commercial farms.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's hurting the small towns.
The
characters are very real in The Home Place. I got to know them and like them and not like some of them. Right.
I think I did my job, if
that's
part of your review, yeah.
Why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a synopsis of The Home Place?
The Home Place, the whole story takes place on a November weekend in this town of Brandon, Colorado, a small farming town on the eastern plains. And the story revolves around four high school friends. And it really, the story really starts before this weekend. In 1992, the Little Towns High School basketball team won the state championship. And one of their players was good enough that he got a scholarship to University of Colorado and even goes on to play in the NBA for a short time. His name is Chase Ford. And Chase hasn't been back to Brandon for 16 years, not even for his father's funeral. And on the weekend that he decides to come back, it's a deer hunting season. He's going to stay at the farm, do a little bit of business that needs to be taken care of. But that weekend, they find the current high school basketball star's body outside of town. The boy's been shot, and he's naked, and he's surrounded by four dead buffalo. Chase's best friend in high school was the deputy sheriff. His name is Marty Storm. A girl that was in their class, her name is Bertie Hawkins. Bertie is the game warden for the county. The two of them really never left Brandon. And then the fourth part of the puzzle is Chase's old high school girlfriend. Her name is Mercy Saylor. Her father was a banker. Her mother owned a cafe in town. And she vowed to herself that she wanted to get out of Brandon and never come back. But now, through a course of events, a bad marriage that's broke up in a divorce, her father's dead and her mother's in a nursing home, Mercy finds herself back in the little town running the family cafe. So the story revolves really between their four viewpoints.
Right.
As they unravel this mystery. Yeah.
I tell you what, Bertie is quite a character. I think she was my favorite. She's really got the personality.
Good. Because the sequel to The Home Place is in submission right now, and it's Bertie's story.
Oh, good.
Bertie becomes the lead character in the second book.
Oh, I will definitely look for that because I liked her.
We're in negotiations now, hopefully.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And then the second novel is Brokeheart.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about what it's about. I just finished it last night.
Brokeheart, actually, in my writing career, Brokeheart, 2009, I was an unpublished author entering my work in writing contests around the country. And in 2009, Brokeheart won the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers Contest.
Oh.
It won a Pacific Northwest contest. It placed second down in Albuquerque with Southwest Writers, and also won at a small conference in Colorado. It was done at the Crested Butte ski area. As a result of that, I got an agent and signed with an agent in 2010. And the book was, we got turned down by some great people.
Well, there you go. Congratulations.
Yeah. And it hung out there. My agent thought it was good enough. We just had it because it has a very traditional Western voice to the story.
Yes.
There's a strong paranormal element in it.
Yes.
And it was that blended genre that people just weren't sure where it would go on the shelf, and with the person that was looking for a traditional Western, would, when they got to the paranormal stuff, would they say, "Hey, this isn't what I normally read," and this was 5 years ago. That was the time of all the teenage werewolf stuff that was happening,
right?
And Twilight and that kind of stuff. And it certainly wasn't that kind of book either,
right?
And so it kind of bounced around. When we won the Hillerman Prize, a small press in Salt Lake City made us an offer on the second book. And so we had to do on the first book on Brokeheart. So that's how it came to be. And Brokeheart came out in October of last year, 17. And the sequel, A Town Called Vengeance, came out in May of 2018.
Oh.
And it's a story of a disgraced frontier newspaper man that arrives in the town of Brokeheart, Colorado, which is a mining town high in the mountains, in 1879, without a penny in his pocket. He settles for a job at the local newspaper that he goes on. It's going to be a temporary job to get a little money in his pocket. He settles for he takes a storefront sign and settles for a job digging a grave. When he finally lands his job with the newspaper reporter, publishers tells him, I want you to write about a murder. And he says that there's been a murder in town. He says, don't you know? You just dug the man's grave.
Right.
And we jump into a story that kind of winds. It's very traditional in that there's a sheriff and a sidekick and a dance hall girl with a heart of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And Kepler follows a string of murders through some mining towns in the West and gets more for it than what he bargained for.
It's true. Great characters in this one also. And in many ways, they are the typical Western characters. But they're facing things that aren't so typical. And I won't give it away.
And in the second book, A Town Called Vengeance,
yes,
Kepler follows this evil presence from Colorado to the deserts of Arizona. And it's the time of... you know, it's early 1880s, so we brush elbows with Doc Holliday and the Earp Brothers, and the Apaches are on the warpath and that kind of thing. So it's we stick to the tropes, but take it a different direction.
Oh, great. I look forward to that one so much. And then you just are submitting the sequel to Home Place.
Yeah. Actually, I have two novels in submission right now, a traditional Western, very traditional Western that we're waiting, and then the second book from the characters in place on the Home Place.
Great. Well, have you always written?
No.
Okay.
No, I always thought I could write, and my father was a reader, and he traveled for business, and always came home with these paperback books, and he read, and of course, the Louis L'Amour and Max Brand, Elmore Leonard kind of stuff. He also had that collection of, remember the Reader's Digest condensed books?
Oh,
that
yeah.
Hardcover, that, I think that came out quarterly.
I grew up with that.
He had those and always had a book going, and I picked up and read a lot of his stuff. And, well, you know, when I got to junior high and high school, when a teacher would assign a paper, or he had to write a short story when the class would grow, I wasn't looking forward to it, but it was something I always thought I could do.
Mm-hmm.
Early in life, I had a couple of feeble starts where I tried to write stuff and just never life got in the way. But I can actually tell you the first time when I determined to write a novel, I was traveling for business, and I was in Detroit after 9/11, and that was in those months after 9/11 when we had to, we never knew how long we were going to be in a security line at the airport.
Right.
And a colleague had dropped me at the airport, I'm going to say about 1:30 on a Friday afternoon. I probably had a 5 o'clock flight back to Denver. And in 20 minutes, I was sitting in an empty terminal. I just breezed through the security line for whatever it was that reason. And I finished a paperback book on the way out, a very forgettable one. And I perused the gift store to see if there was something I wanted to read. Didn't see anything that really interested me, and I sat down in the Detroit terminal, opened my laptop, and said, I'm going to write a book. And I started typing out a story. Honest, that's the true story.
That's great.
And worked on that thing for 2 or 3 months, took some adult education classes, and tried to, and it's not a very good book. I finished it.
Good.
And I finished it. And about that time, I discovered Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers in Denver, which at that time was a group of about 400 fiction writers. At that time, I'm guessing maybe 150 were published, but they had critique groups going on in Denver, did monthly workshops, had a annual convention. And I kind of fell in with a critique group, that held me accountable for, you know, producing pages.
Right.
And that's really where the second book was actually that Brokart. Well, actually, I finished the first book that I told you wasn't very good and started writing the sequel to that. And then I said, hey, wait, and had the idea and wrote Brokart. And that was 2000, finished that up in 2009, and that's when I had that string of good luck winning those contests and found the agent. And,
Well, you praised the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers quite highly in both books, and a lot of the writers I talk to do give so much credit to their writing groups.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my first, I thought a writer was a guy that sat in his attic, you know, with the door shut and his typewriter and, you know, slid pages under the door.
Right.
And if they were good enough, somebody slid money back to him.
Right.
That was a very, very lonesome, you know, job, which very much appealed to me. I'm kind of a loner. And,
right.
And, but I think that for me, I had to first, it's easy to procrastinate. And,
yes.
And, you know, so if you get a group of people that are going to meet at some kind of regular deal and then you're holding each other accountable to produce so many pages a month or a week or something like that,
mm-hmm.
that gets the story flowing. And then you learn a lot from reading other people's
right.
stuff. Sometimes it's easier to spot, you know, simple mistakes and grammatical stuff in other people's work than it is your own.
Right.
And then the bigger things like developing characters, you
mm-hmm.
know, when they tell you what they see in characters versus what you have in your mind, I think, yeah, that for me, that's where it helps. In fact, I just recently, I retired in April, and my wife and I moved to Estes Park, Colorado.
Yeah.
And our first priority was finding a church home up here, and our second priority for myself was finding a writer's group, some people I could start sharing with.
Right.
And, that's been checked off. Both,
great.
Both of those things
Very
have been
good.
Checked off, yeah.
Well, would you like to read something for us?
Certainly.
Great.
I think grabbing the home place.
Okay.
And I think just the first few pages of the home place, I think it sets the tone for the story
mm-hmm.
very well. So this is chapter one of the home.
Okay.
When Chase Ford was a boy, he couldn't understand why he never heard the sounds of dawn. Why couldn't he hear night tear away along the horizon and day take its place? Why didn't the sky sizzle when the warmth of the sun touched was what was left of the cool darkness? His father, Big Paul, would have called him foolish for having such thoughts. Some part of Chase knew he was only a visitor on this wide-open, windswept splash of prairie. Chase was the first of four generations of Ford men to leave Comanche County. And for Chase, leaving saved the best and hid the worst. But Chase Ford had come home, and as the first spikes of orange painted the gray morning, Chase spotted a deer at the edge of the field. It was upwind. No chance it would scent him. And through the binoculars, Chase could tell it was a big deer. The broken tine on the buck's wide antlers and its graying muzzle meant it was an old bachelor, most likely run off from the herd by the younger bucks to live out what years it had left on its own. If Chase could be patient, the deer might drift into the stubble field where he'd have a shot. His father's rifle would reach that far. He'd seen Big Paul take game a quarter mile away more times than he could count. But it had been almost 16 years since he'd held his father's gun, and that many years since Chase had been home. Chase swung the glasses back, but the animal was gone. He searched the sagebrush at the edge of the field, but the buck knew all the places to hide on the home place better than Chase. For now, there was a thermos of coffee waiting in his truck, and for the first time in 16 years, he had nothing else to do except wait for this next chance at the deer and listen for those sounds at dawn.
That's great. Good old Chase. That deer is so metaphorically associated with Chase.
Good, I did my job again.
There you go. Wow. See there?
Yeah.
So we get to know, you have a lot of characters in these books. Do they come back to haunt you?
Oh, great. Cool. You know, when I started working on the sequel to The Home Place, like I say, and we move Birdie the Game Warden, mm-hmm. becomes her story. Chase is there, but he's a secondary character. Marty the deputy sheriff is there.
Good.
And we got the volunteer firemen show up. We introduce some it's county fair time. You know, at the home place, it's November and cold.
Mm-hmm.
And the next book, it's going to be county fair time, the middle of this summer, and it's scorching hot, and so we got carnies, rodeo cowboys, and that kind of cast of characters coming in.
Oh, great.
So it was fun. I think, and the critiques that we got on the home place was that the community and the countryside was as much a character to that book as, as the people. So I definitely wanted to work on this small town,
mm-hmm.
now how it's being affected by the visitors coming in for the rodeo and the fair, and the heat wave, and how the farmers and ranchers take the heat versus the people coming in. So, haunted, I think that's a good word. It wasn't so much that they came and spoke to me, it was that I wanted to make sure that they appeared in the right places.
Right. Well, I'm excited to read that because I did get attached to those people.
Yeah, now that's, the home place, the Hillerman Prize was a one-book contract.
Right.
So we have not gotten anything signed to go ahead with the second book at this point. So fingers are crossed.
You betcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the hard part about writing is the second half of it where you have to start marketing.
The editor at St. Martin's for the home place,
mm-hmm.
The book came out in September. He left in October to go to HarperCollins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that left left you without the champion inside that was on your side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I'm finding out that's part of the writing.
That is.
Yeah, the other thing is if home place would have sold enough books, it wouldn't have been a question, but we were on the margin,
Well, I think that, wasn't it the last Hillerman conference where you won this?
Yeah, and since Western Writers of America has become the home place, no pun intended,
right,
for the Hillerman Award. They took I won in 15, they took the year 16 off. There was no prize given in 16,
okay,
because they had to get the two calendars. Western Writers' calendar was different than when Anne had her conference.
Well, great. So what are you working on now?
Well, that's a great question. Because we're kind of in this holding pattern to see if we're going to have something to go ahead with on either the sequel to Home Place.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the third book, there is a third book outlined in the Brocart series.
Oh, good.
But it's all numbers, how soon they'll want that one. And I got this traditional Western. It's a completed manuscript. I'm really hoping that somebody will pick that up. And then there's two or three other ideas going on around in my head. Like I said, I live in Estes Park, Colorado, which is on, Estes Park, Colorado is the home of the Stanley Hotel.
It is.
That is where Stephen King stayed one night, and from his adventures that night, he wrote The Shining.
That's right.
It's
supposed to be haunted.
They're counting on it. They market it that way.
They do.
But I've got a mystery I've written, but it needs some work, and it takes place in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Great.
Yeah.
What's a great setting.
Yeah, beautiful setting. And since I'm here, I think the book needs some work, and now I'm here, and I'm thinking that if nothing happens with these others the first of the year, that I would make that my project.
Great. So what is your writing process?
It's changing because, like I say, I traveled and I mm-hmm. wrote a lot in hotels and stuff at the end of the day. And I'm trying to, I wish I could say that I was one of those guys that got up at the crack of the dawn and by noon had produced 20 pages. But I seem to be more creative and better write in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Through the summer we moved and had that challenge to get through and settling in a new community, getting stuff done. Also, I did meet with these people up here, two women that are writers that live here in Estes Park, and we've agreed to start meeting.
Good.
And
So you're setting it up.
But you know, as far as there's always that question: are you a plotter? Do you outline
right
in detail and write this story, or do you sit down and kind of fly by the seat of the pants?
Right.
I'm someplace in between. Everything I've written, I knew where the story started. Mm-hmm. I knew where it was going to end. Some of the stuff that was going to happen in between, I kind of found as I wrote. But I don't write. I call it, I don't want to sound crude here, but I call it vomiting on the page.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just open my computer and write down ideas, even words I think that should appear in the story, and just throw down these notes.
Right.
And then I write on top of that as I come and kind of absorb those thoughts as I go.
Mm-hmm.
I'll sit down for a half hour when I start to write and just like throw those ideas on the page and then shuffle them around as I come to them where they'll happen in the story. But I'm aiming at a target, but I'm keeping that target in front of me all the time.
Yeah. That's great. That's a really good description of a writing process. I kind of do the same thing, just see what comes out.
I went to a workshop with Jeffrey Deaver, the New York Times mm-hmm. best-selling author, and he said, I write a book in 3 months. Then he said, but I outline and research for 6 months.
Right.
And writes a very detailed thing.
Exactly.
And then he's got his story in his mind and all his research done, and then he said, puts it together and writes very quickly. Summer before last, I was at a writer's conference in New York City, and Lee Child spoke.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, I mean, there's a rumor out here that among writers that he only does one draft.
Wow.
And that was asked, and he said, oh, yeah. He says, I sit down about noon, and he does his writing work in the morning, answering emails and his marketing things, and
mm-hmm.
starts writing after lunch and goes till 5 or 6 and then goes out for dinner and then comes back and works on a little bit more. But then he said, he basically, it just happens there on the screen in front of him.
Wow. Amazing.
I think the point is that you've got to find what works for you.
I do too. I think you're right.
Yeah.
And we're just about out of time. Anything else you want to add?
I was just going to add that I actually went to college at Durango at Fort Lewis back in the early 70s.
So you know the area.
For a couple of years.
Yeah.
For a couple of years, and then I've traveled to Farmington on business over my whole career. So, yeah, very familiar with the area.
It's a good place.
Yeah.
A good place. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your writing, and thanks so much for interviewing with me, and I look forward to the next book.
Thank you very much.
This is Tracy Hales Vass, right on Four Corners. Been talking to Kevin Wolf, author of The Home Place, Brocard, A Town Called Vengeance, and others forthcoming. This is KSJE 90.9 FM.